Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Volume Knob, the songs that saved your life. This week, Michelle and Kashmir. Hi, friends, and welcome to another episode of The Volume Knob, where every couple of weeks I share a story with you that touches on the powerful emotion that music can bring us. This is the second to last episode of season four. I will be taking a break after the next episode, which will come out in 2 weeks, to recoup. It's been a really tough spring. I lost my father earlier this year, and there's been other health problems within my extended family. Been very busy at work as well. So, gonna take a break to charge the batteries for a little while. I have some fantastic storytellers queued up for you in season five. And if you're interested in season five and what that's gonna bring, I would encourage you to get over to the website of the show. That's www.volumeknob.net. And click on the link that allows you to subscribe to the newsletter. I'll be giving people updates on when season five will begin through that newsletter and through the social channels. So I would encourage you to get out there and take a look at that. This week's story is brought to you by one of New York's finest.
Hi, my name is Michelle Carlo. I'm a storyteller who's been told that she's comedy adjacent. I'm an author, and I'm also a sometime actor. And the song that saved my life is Kashmir by Led Zeppelin.
Michelle's story is, I mean, it's fantastic. I'll just straight up say it off the top. It does a lot of things so well. One of the things it did for me was really transport me to what I imagine the Bronx of the late 1970s looks like. It's not a lurid portrayal, but it does look really unflinchingly at some of the things that are out there, things like crumbling infrastructure and gang violence and really, really startling racism, things that I'd only seen in documentaries. And despite this, Michelle is being able to bring humor and humanity to the entirety of the process. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Here's Michelle.
I was standing online in the basement of Macy's Park Chester in the Bronx. A line that seemed to be a thousand teenagers, all chanting and cheering and waiting for something to happen. There were no adults to be seen anywhere, not any salespeople or any other grown-ups, except for presumably the two lone Ticketron employees at their window far beyond where I could see. All around me were kids I knew, but I didn't speak to anyone, because I was on a mission. It was a little bit past 10 o'clock in the morning, and you may be thinking that we all should have been in school, and maybe all of us should have been, and some of us would have been, except for one thing. Led Zeppelin was going to Madison Square Garden, and tickets were about to go on sale. Oh yes, that's what you had to do in those long ago analog days if you wanted to get concert tickets. You had to listen to your favorite radio station nonstop. In my case, it was 95.5 WPLJ, past the J. You had to listen to this radio station nonstop, day and night, and wait for the DJ to announce the time that tickets went on sale. And when they did announce this, you went to your nearest Ticketron and you waited. And if it happened to be a weekday, fuck school. Because who in their right mind was going to go to school when for $7.50 you could see Led Zeppelin play Kashmir? Well, I didn't get a ticket that day because even the blue nosebleed seats, which is all a kid like me could afford, were a whole $1.50 more than they had been the year before. That meant the $7.50 ticket last year was now $9. And I didn't have enough money. And neither did a lot of other kids. I mean, some of them expressed their displeasure by throwing mannequins around and tagging graffiti, but I wasn't having any of that. I mean, I was pretty much a good kid. So I shoved my crumpled $8 bills back into the pocket of my jeans, looked at the clock and saw that, oh, it was basically a little bit past 11 now. And, well, the day wasn't a total waste after all. I could go to school and get some school in. So I leave Macy's and I walk about the mile or so up to where my high school is. But as soon as I get to Worcester Square train station, which is where it was, I notice that something is up. For one thing, I could see a ring of cop cars around everywhere. And for another, I could hear yelling and screaming from all the way where I was down the hill. And then it hit me and I remembered. This day was Kill Whitey Day. Now I know for most of you, your high school days are a halcyon, carefree time, filled with fond, gauzy memories of pep rallies, homecoming dances, and proms. But at the high school that I went to, Herbert H. Lehman, in the Bronx, we also had pivotal events that we looked forward to each day. Kill Whitey Day and Kill Black and Puerto Rican Day. And I got my butt kicked on both days because no one could tell what the hell I was. It has been said that gangs are cyclical in New York cities. There were certainly gangs in the 1950s and there are certainly gangs now. But in the late 1970s, teenage New York, especially the Bronx, which is where I grew up, was divided and ruled by the white gangs, the Bronx Ministers and the Bronx Aliens, and the black and Latino gangs, the Savage Skulls, Savage Nomads, Mongol Brothers, and the infamous Latino biker gang, the Chingaling. And every spring, every single high school in New York City, not just the Bronx, would have their days where they would be at war. And just like any innocent people behind the front lines, you just had to get by as best you could. And the thing was, you knew exactly when your kill day was going to be. Somehow this information crossed race and ethnic and neighborhood lines and without cell phones or the internet. No, you knew when your kill day was gonna be. And not going into school that day was not an option. Because if you didn't, then the kids from your own neighborhood would make you a pariah. And they would call you a wuss. And worse things that I won't say that we used to say in the 70s, but we don't say anymore. And they would maybe even beat you up anyway. Because you did not risk your life along with everybody else. This year, luckily, I had escaped Kill Black and Puerto Rican Day unscathed, but not so the year before, when two Italian boys cornered me and one held me down while the other stabbed me in the shoulder with an ice pick. They actually apologized to me afterwards and told me that they hoped I knew that it wasn't personal. But I still have the scar. So not going into school that day was not an option. I went around the back where there was always a door propped open, which everyone, except for school security, knew about. So I go into, and this is like the basement of the school, like the bottom level. And I'm walking, you know, where the gym and the locker rooms and everything are. And I'm walking, you know, through because I figured, oh, I can go to my hygiene class, right? Day's not a total loss, but it's so quiet. And it wasn't really brightly lit for some reason. Maybe that's in my mind, but I don't know. I felt like I was walking through like this long, dark corridor. And I started getting nervous. So because I was nervous, I decided, maybe I need to smoke a cigarette before, because this is what we did in the 70s, kids. Maybe I need to smoke a cigarette before I go to class. So I duck into the girls' bathroom. I go down to the last stall, and I assume the smoker's position. Now, if you were a teenager in the 70s and 80s, you know what this is. You stand on top of the toilet seat, but you crouch down so no one sees your head above the stall, and you light your cigarette, and then you wave it back and forth like this so the smoke doesn't, you know, congeal or whatever, like envelop the room. You know, after a couple of drags of my Newport Light, because I was a good little Latina girl, even though I was living in the white neighborhood, I smoked my menthol cigarettes like the rest of my relatives did. The cigarette just wasn't doing it for me anymore. But I decided, let me take one more drag. Famous last words. Because just as I was taking that last drag, the bathroom door opened and four black girls came in. Now, I knew they were black girls because of their names. Because the Taishas and Tawandas and Danae's of the next generations were either still in the uterus or about to be born. The black girls of my generation were the last that were named after jewels and desirable attributes. Ruby, precious, crystal, and unity. Dangerous black pride lionesses that had razor blades hidden in their afros and carried bandanas with penny rolls in them. Whatever they caught, they would not release. And the conversation went something like this. Dag, man, Unity, you see that blondie girl face when we knocked out her tooth? Yeah, but shoot, my hand all cut up now. Oh, snap, you smell something? Who in here? Yep. I had neglected to do the one thing that could have saved me, which was to douse the cigarette and keep still. And now there was nothing I could do as the girls went one by one, stall by stall, until they found me. I mean, one? Definitely. Come on. But two? Maybe. But there were four of them, and it would have been suicide for me to tell them they were making a mistake. Because once, on another Kill Whitey day, I remember there was this Irish girl who kind of looked like she had what they used to call black Irish back in the day. You know, she had dark skin and like olive skin and black hair, and she tried to front that she was Puerto Rican, but then someone ratted on her, and she got beaten up so bad in retribution afterwards that she ended up in a hospital for over a month. And that was not going to happen to me. So they had opened the stall and they found me, and there was nothing that I could do as they pulled me down, they dragged me and they threw me on the floor and they punched me and they kicked me and they penny rolled me. How long? Too long. And then the bathroom door opened again. Yo, Nancy, we got ourselves another white girl. You want some? In walks Nancy Jimenez, who really was half Irish and half Puerto Rican. A blessed creature who walked seamlessly between the races, befriending everyone and beaten up by none. And she walked over to where I lay, curled up on the floor because I was trying to protect my face. And she looks at me and she goes, what? Dag, man. That ain't a white girl, that's Shell. The other girls went, what? And she said, yeah, I told you, that's Shell. I know her from homeroom. She Puerto Rican, she just look white. And then she turns on her heel and she walks out of the bathroom. And wherever you are, Nancy Jimenez, thank you. You did me such a solid, and I truly hope your life has been good. And then the leader of the black girls, she pokes me with her proked and she goes, you Spanish? You Puerto Rican? And I spit out like this clot of blood and snot, and they say the only thing I could think of. Sí! Now, four pairs of eyes saw me as a human being for the first time. Oh man, that ain't right, said Unity. No, we gotta do something. Girls, help her up. So, Precious, Crystal, and Ruby, help me up. Get that girl some water, fix her up. So they go to the sink and they wet their, they drop the penny rolls and they wet their wearing bandanas and they start daubing at me. You know, I kind of had like a little bit of a bloody lip. I would have a little bit of a black eye the next day. But I was lucky that I didn't get cut by any razor blades, because when Nancy Jimenez came in, the one of the razor blades just went whoosh, right over my head and it clattered onto the floor. Thank God. Right? Oof, that would have been horrible. So anyway, these four girls, they're trying to clean me up. And Unity's like, what? Why didn't you say something? Why didn't you say he was Puerto Rican? Why didn't you say nothing? That ain't right. And her sense of like dignity and what's proper in the world has totally been disrupted. And she's pacing back and forth. She goes, nah, man, we gotta do something. And she goes, ah, girls, I know. Give her your weed. Ruby and Crystal go into their afro and their tube sock, respectively, and one of them pulls out a joint rolled in strawberry Easy Wider, which is like this pink-flavored rolling paper they had in the 70s, and the other one pulls out one that looked like it was rolled in banana Easy Wider, and they hand them to me. But Precious wasn't having any of this. Precious just tried to sidle her way out the bathroom door, but she couldn't escape Unity's watchful eye. Unity's fist shot out, biff, and she punched the side of Precious's head so hard her afro pick clattered right across the room. And she said, bitch, I said give her your weed, bitch, give it up. And silent tears coursed down Precious's face as she silently dug into her t-shirt and into the teen form bra she was probably wearing and pulled out a sweat-stained, half-full nickel bag and handed it to me. Now, Unity figured she had done her job, so she's like, all right, now, you good now, right? I mean, like, we sorry and all, but, like, you should have said something. Next time, you say what you are, all right? We sorry, but, like, we done you a solid, so we gonna go, okay? You ain't gonna tell him nothing, right? All right, we good. All right, girls, let's go. Let's kick some real white ass. Yeah! And just like that, the girls left the bathroom, and I'm just there by myself. I mean, and I'm just like, like total shock, because like I don't know how to process any of this. I mean people got jumped all the time. This is a thing that just happened if you were a teenager in the Bronx back in those days. And like I didn't have any recourse, because like I wanted to like run after them and like beat them up, but like what was I going to do by myself? I'm like, who was I going to tell, and who was going to do anything about it anyway? And like all these thoughts are going through me, and I'm just like totally torn apart about the uselessness and the hopelessness of it all. And then I look into what I'm holding in my hands, and I know exactly how to get the best revenge. All I walked right back out of school, and I walked a couple of blocks up to this corner hangout where all the potheads and the stoners hung out, because I didn't smoke weed. I was a good kid, and I sold them all the pot, and then I ran back to Macy's in Parkchester, getting there just in time before Ticketron closed at 4:00 in the afternoon. So yeah, the day wasn't a total waste after all, because I got to see Led Zeppelin play Kashmir.
Hey friend, thanks for listening. The Volume Knob is a weekly exploration of music and the way it makes us feel. Many thanks to the talented and very professional Michelle Carlo for her time and vulnerability this week. The story she told on the show makes up a chapter of her book. The chapter is called Kill Whitey Day, and the book is called Fish Out of Agua. Be sure to get over to the Volume Knob website. That's www.volumeknob.net for show notes, including a link to the book and all sorts of other information about her. While you're there, be sure to sign up for the Volume Knob mailing list to receive our newsletter with updates about season 5 of the show. Many thanks as well to my son Miles for his 30-second review of Kashmir.
So, tell me what you think.
This song, I have a weird way to describe it that I don't exactly have the context for. It is like the bubble boy of songs, which what I mean by that is it's perfect if your brain isn't working properly. No, I'm not saying that as an insult. I'm just saying that it's very much, it sounds like something that you would listen to well on a hangover, and I'm kind of a fan of that. However, I'm not sure I can listen to that all of the time when my brain is pumping 100%. Then again, we only do use 10% of our brain, so who knows?
I think your analysis may be more astute than you think. As always, the Volume Knob is produced by Semlevin Audio, and it's hosted, mixed, edited, written, and sound designed by me. My name is Keith Seri, and I'm not only a podcast producer, but I'm also a dog dad to one of the most enthusiastic and, truth be told, kind of dumb Labradoodles in all of Montreal. In fact, last week, Theo was on the dog park with a mini Dachshund named Daisy, who had taken his tennis ball. I was unsuccessful in getting the ball back from her until Daisy's owner channeled James Brown and went with the direct approach.
Bitch, give it up!
I'll see you again in 2 weeks with another story about the songs that saved your life.